You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast on this Friday, June 8th, 2018. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to it on iTunes or Spotify, and also leave the show a good review in iTunes. We're going to do a mailbag today. Usually we do it Thursday, but this week we'll do our mailbag on Friday. And these are questions that have been submitted through the comment section of GangreneNation.com. And this week it's really limited to one person who had a ton of questions. So let's jump on in and answer as many as we can. First question, which standard statistic is most indicative of an offensive player's production? Yards, touchdowns, or average yards per carry slash reception slash attempt? I think probably in most cases, the average stats are going to be more important than the volume stats. And by average, I mean yards per carry, yards per reception, but there are some caveats there. It's not an ultimate stat by any stretch of the imagination, because any skilled player's stats are in some ways dependent on their teammates. When you're a running back, it's partially dependent on your offensive line. There may be a back who has 4.5 yards per carry, another back who has 4.5 yards per carry, and the quality can differ wildly depending on the quality of the offensive line. You have a great offensive line, 4.5 yards per carry isn't that difficult to get. You have a bad offensive line, you may be doing a spectacular job to get to 4.5 yards per carry. When it comes to receivers and tight ends, you're obviously dealing with the quarterback, so that's, bad quarterback can drag your production down if he can't hit passes down the field, if all he can hit are the short passes. So that comes into play too. And the volume stats do matter to a certain extent, because if the guy who has, let's say, 1,000 yards, and we'll talk about a running back in this case, a running back who has 1,000 yards with an average of 4.3 yards per carry is more valuable than the running back who has 500 yards at 4.5 yards per carry. Because he's doing it more often, and essentially that means he's carrying the ball a lot more. And presumably, if he wasn't getting those carries, those would be going to a player who was worse. So that comes into play. I think the other thing I'd say is, when it comes to receivers and tight ends, sometimes an average per reception that's too high is indicative of a player who's kind of limited, because that means that all they're catching are deep passes. They're not making the plays that move the chains. And, it's not the end of the world if all you are is a deep threat, but it's also a sign that you're not necessarily a go-to type of receiver who's useful in every big situation. So there's some caveats. Typically you'll be better off with the average per play than you will just the total volume, though. And touchdowns can vary wildly. That's part of usage when you're a back. Do you get the goal line carries to somebody else? When you're a receiver, they can have some use. They can show you how effective you are in the red zone. But even then, touchdowns can vary wildly from year to year. So I think, typically, generally speaking, you're going to talk about average. Yards per carry, yards per catch. But again, these are not ultimate stats. Next question. Which standard statistic is more indicative of a defensive back production, interceptions or pass defense? Neither. I'll tell you why. Is that the great corners in this league tend to not get the ball even thrown in their direction. The quarterback looks in the other way. So neither of those. I think one of the biggest mistakes you can ever make evaluating football is judging a player on interceptions. So I guess to answer the question, passes defensed are more important than interceptions, but they're not that important, because again, the guys who are the great defensive players, they don't even have the ball thrown in their direction. They just blanket their receiver and force the quarterback to look elsewhere. So if we're looking for the best stat, I'd say it's probably yards allowed in coverage per cover snap, because that encapsulates what happens when the quarterback looks away from you. But again, there's no ultimate stat in football. I mean, those can be skewed as well. say you play across from a really bad corner, your stats are going to look a little bit better because the other team's quarterback is going to target your counterpart. They're not going to target you if they know they can get a completion on the other corner on the team all the time. And the other thing about interceptions, they fluctuate wildly. You know, I think the Jets had a guy a couple of years ago, Marcus Williams, who posted just unbelievable interception stats. He barely played. He was kind of the dime back in 2015, posted big interception stats, and he even had a couple of interceptions to start the next season and then stopped intercepting passes. So, you know, there's some luck involved when it comes to interception, at least when we're getting away from the truly elite ball hawks like the Ed Reeds, the Richard Shermans of the world. I mean, there are very few guys who are able to post big interception totals consistently. Another guy, Antonio Cromartie, I think had a 10 interception season. Never really heard from again after, at least in terms of interceptions, never really approached that again. So you can have some outlier seasons when it comes to big interception totals. And ending our questions on stats, which basic stat is most indicative of a defensive lineman's production? Tackles, sacks, forced fumbles, quarterback hits, or quarterback hurries? Well, I think that the issue, I would say it would be a combination of sacks, quarterback hits, and quarterback hurries, because those are the plays that impact passing plays, but they only impact passing plays, so I'm not sure that those necessarily. So if we're talking about in terms of pass rushing, I think you'd want to use a combination of the pressure stats. I don't think sacks alone tell the story. I think that hits are more important than hurries. Sacks are the most important. Hits are second most important. Hurries are most important. I think that we've grown up, I think a lot of people have grown up with the idea that sacks are the only stat that gets studied, so people tend to think sacks are the only thing that matters. They're more important than hits. They're more important than hurries. But the total of the three kind of gives you more of a idea of how effective a pass rusher is, because to some extent, again, sacks are kind of lucky. If a guy is consistently getting hurries but not a lot of sacks, odds are things are going to even out. And as time goes on, he's going to start picking up more sacks. Whereas somebody posts a 10 sack season, but not a lot of hurries, odds are the next year their sack total is going down. So you get in the neighborhood of the quarterback a lot, odds are you're going to have a lot of sacks, and there can be outlier seasons here or there. When it comes to the run, I think tackles would be more significant, but even then a lot of great run stuffers help set up their other teams by drawing blocks. They help set up their teammates by drawing blocks, you know, letting the guys behind them run free. So tackles would be more important for run defense, but they're not necessarily the ultimate. Again, I think what it comes down to is there's no ultimate stat. BlueChew.com, that's BLUE, like the color, CHEW.com, brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill. Blue Chew, again, BLUECHEW, is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now we have a deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com, again, BLUE like the color, CHEW.com, and you get your first shipment free when you use the promo code LOCKEDON, and it's just $5 shipping. Again, BLUECHEW.com. Our next question, will the Rams be as good as advertised this year? You know, there was a question I missed last week that talked about teams that are on the rise, teams that rise out of nowhere, and they mentioned last year was the Rams and the Jaguars and teams that fall out of nowhere, and I didn't get to this question. It asked me to predict a team that was good last year that'll fall, pick a team that was bad last year that'll rise, and for the team that's good that will fall this year, I actually gave some thought to the Rams. This is not going to be an easy trip through the NFC West this year. I mean, just look at the quarterbacks in the NFC West. You have Russell Wilson, who's not going anywhere in Seattle. You have Garoppolo in San Francisco, who, you know, they're everybody. I don't even know that they can be a sleeper, because can you be a sleeper if everybody is picking you to do big things this year? And even Arizona with Rosen, they're, you know, that's not going to be an easy out. So I think that the Rams are, you know, a candidate to kind of fall off, be the hyped team. Maybe this year's Oakland, where the team's got a lot of hype, the team's trying to build on a big year, and things just kind of fall off. Now, very, very talented team you have with the Rams, so I couldn't guarantee you that they're going to take a step back, but it's not going to be an easy, again, this is not going to be easy for the Rams this year, and I think that there's a little bit of the element of, you know, they're not going to sneak up on anybody this year. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to be the team like last year. Going into the year, no, there weren't a lot of people picking the Rams to do a whole lot. You know, some people may have thought they'd be better. I'm not sure there were many people picking them to win the NFC West last year. This year, they're going to have a bigger target on their back as the reigning division champions. I think we'll start finding out about Sean McVay this year. You know, McVay is coming into this year with a lot of hype, but that's not uncommon for a first-year coach. Just look across recent history in the NFL. Look how much success coaches have had their first year, and things have kind of fallen off for them the second year. And, you know, I have a little theory behind that is, when you're hired as a head coach in the NFL, odds are you've been thinking about what you do for years. So you're going in with a pretty good plan. So you're able to implement that year one. A lot of guys are. But a lot of guys aren't able to sustain that success because eventually the league kind of figures out what you're doing. They adjust to it. And I think the measure of a good coach is, how do you respond after that happens? How do you respond once you hit a little adversity? Can you prevent things from going off the rails? You know, look across town. Ben McAdoo, who had a great first year and is now a punchline. I mean, he's just a punchline because things fell apart for him to such an extent the second year that he lost his job with an organization in the Giants that typically is not quick to fire a coach. You know, they're not quick to make moves. And McAdoo was such a disaster. After after making the playoffs his first year, year two was such a disaster that the Giants pretty much had no choice but to fire him in season. So that was a case where a guy came in, he had thought things through, he had a plan for year one. Once things hit a little adversity, though, he was not able to keep the train on the tracks. So I'm not saying that's going to happen with McVay, but I think McVay is going to get more of a test this year. You know, lots of guys get anointed the next Vince Lombardi year one, and aren't able to have success after the first year. So I think I'm not sure the Rams are necessarily a team that's going to meet its expectations just because those expectations are so high. Next question. Which player would you prefer lights it up in preseason, Darnold or Bridgewater? Darnold by a mile. That's pretty easy. I understand the argument for Bridgewater is that it will increase his trade value. The Jets will be able to get something for him, and the Jets, you know, are heading into this next draft without a second round pick. So I'm not sure Bridgewater is going for a second round pick, but if you could improve your draft capital, that would be good. I understand that argument. You know, Darnold's a longer term play, but I'd rather Darnold just looks great from the start. I think the best thing for the Jets is Darnold grabs the bull by the horns, looks great in training camp, looks great in preseason, and grabs the starting job. And I've told you this before. There seem to be people on both sides of the debate. People saying start him from day one. People saying let him sit. My view is, let's see what he does. Let's see what he's capable of handling right now. How much of the playbook is he capable of executing at this point? How good does he look against defenses with pro speed? Let's see how these things look. And then once we have an idea of that, then we can determine whether he should play or whether he should sit. But I think for the long-term health of this franchise, Darnold playing better would clearly be more beneficial. In an ideal world, both would. I'd love to see Bridgewater play well so the Jets could get something in return for him in a potential trade. But I think Darnold really taking the bull by the horns and taking control of the starting job, taking control of the locker room, really putting his stamp on it, saying, this is my team. That's what you want this year. I mean, that would be, you know, that would have the makings of a potentially successful year, even if no matter what the record is. Because, and when I say no matter what the record is, if Darnold's doing these things, the Jets are probably not going to go 3-13. Jets are probably going to have a, you know, even if they're not a great team, they're not going to be one of the worst teams in the league. They won't be picking top five. So I think Darnold is the clear answer there. Next question. Why do so many teams with franchise quarterbacks have so many unsuccessful seasons? Examples are the Chargers, the Saints, the Bengals, the Giants, the Ravens, etc. There are no easy answers there. I think ultimately what it comes down to is having a quarterback is essential, but having a quarterback alone does not necessarily guarantee you success. You know, every team that's successful has a good quarterback for the most part. You know, you can throw in an odd example, you know, a team that kind of gets on a roll 1 year, or they have a great defense, but they're not able to keep it. In the long run, though, every team that's successful has a good quarterback. But not every team that has a good quarterback is successful. And, you know, there are many different reasons for it. The Chargers have had a couple of years where they've had good teams and they've just been killed by their special teams. If you look at the Saints, you have a team that in many ways has been held back by its defense through the years. With the Ravens, Joe Flacco really hasn't been Joe Flacco since they won the Super Bowl in many ways. So, you know, there are lots of different reasons. And that's one of the warnings with the Jets is they have the quarterback, and Lord knows they've been waiting for the quarterback, and Lord knows the quarterback's essential, but this is still a team that has quite a bit of work to do if it wants to contend for a championship. So, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all answer, aside from the fact that just having the quarterback alone isn't enough. And look, sometimes you just run into an unlucky season. Sometimes you run into a season where you have a bunch of key injuries. You could run into a season where you just run into some bad luck at key points. The ball just doesn't bounce your way. So there's no simple answer to it other than, you know, it takes more than the quarterback. Even if you need the quarterback, it takes more than just having the quarterback. You've mentioned how you thought this year's free agency market was subpar. How does next year's market project to be? It's too early for me to answer it because the free agent market never looks as good as it, once we get there as it does the previous June, because there's still going to be a lot of players who sign extensions with their teams. There are going to be players who are franchised, so we'll have a better idea going forward. I mean, typically the free agent classes aren't great, but this year there were I may be able to count the guys on one hand who I had genuine interest in, and so I can't imagine it would be less attractive just because this was a terrible year. I mean, this was a terrible year to have. How much money did the Jets have? 80, 90, 100, something like that. It was a terrible year to have a lot of cap space, and I actually like the fact that outside of Trumaine Johns and the Jets kind of stayed out of giving out big money deals, because I think a lot of those deals teams are going to live to regret. You know, I just can't get over some of the deals that went out, but that's how free agency works. It's teams give deals based on the market they wish was there instead of the market that's there. I think that's just how it goes. Next question. Which 2017 starters have a chance of being cut during training camp, and who would you predict to replace them? Well, I think the guy who really kind of stands out to me is Jermaine Kearse, who could put, if there's a surprise cut in training camp, I think he'd be the guy, because $5 million price tag, and there's a scenario where he is reduced to being a depth player, and at $5 million, that's just too much for depth. If Kearse falls to the number four receiver, if everything checks out with Anunua's health, if there are no other injuries, and if, say, a Terrell Pryor or a Chad Hansen go out there and outplay Kearse, Kearse is the type of guy who's he's useful enough to have if he's in your top three, but if he's your number four receiver, and the Jets are not going to be one of those Chan Gailey type of offenses, probably if you follow the history of people who run offense from a Jeremy Bates type of mindset, they're not team. You usually don't see them load the field with like four or five receivers the way you do under Chan Gailey. So number four receiver is really just kind of a part-time player may be overstating it. You're not going to see the number four receiver that much. And Kearse doesn't help on special teams. And, you know, you're talking about the number of snaps he's going to get. Is it really going to be a big difference between Kearse and somebody else, especially if that other guy can help you on special teams? Is it going to be $5 million worth of difference? Probably not. So Kearse would be the guy it would make sense to move on from if, in the event, everybody's healthy and either Nunwa or Hansen has outplayed him, because at the end of the day, let's say Pryor or Hansen has outplayed them. Because let's just say hypothetically it's Pryor who outplays him. Is there really going to be a bit, how many snaps are is the number four receiver getting? What difference does it make if it's Hansen or if it's Curse? Is there really going to move the needle a whole lot for that team in that limited number of snaps? Especially if, let's say, hypothetically, Hansen could play special team. I'm not sure he can, but so I think, you know, I think that's something you have to take in consideration. But that does require Pryor or Hansen or somebody else, you know, somebody else who's kind of off the radar right now. That does require them stepping up and performing, which is not a guarantee. And if you're asking me right now, is Curse going to be on the team, point blank? What do I think? I think the answer is probably yes, but if you're looking for who's the candidate, I think that's the clear candidate. And our last question. Quincy Enunwa, Robbie Anderson, and Jermaine Curse are all free agents after the season. Which of the three do we resign, and how do we address the loss of those we don't? Okay, Anderson's the easiest one because Anderson's a restricted free agent, so the Jets can essentially keep him in place on a pretty cheap deal. Essentially, they'll have to give him a one-year deal, which I think will be around like $3 million, and that'll be enough to keep him in place because any team that would want to sign him would have to give up a first-round pick, and I think it depends on the type of year. You may give a cheaper one-year deal to Anderson, and the compensation would be a second-round pick. I think if Anderson has a big year, then you'll see him get the first-round compensation attached to him because nobody's going to give up a first-round pick for him. And again, if he doesn't have as great of a year, maybe you just put the cheaper one on him and it's a second-round pick, and no one's going to give up a second-round pick for him. When it comes to Enunwa, let's see how healthy he is. You know, I think a lot of it will be dictated based on health. If he looks good, then I think the Jets will look to bring him back. I think Curse is a guy who, my guess would be, I just said, my guess is he's on the roster 2018. If you're asking me, is he on the roster 2019, I'm probably leaning no, but I wouldn't be shocked. But I think Curse would be the spot you'd look to up. Curse is a guy, Curse is kind of like a placeholder. He's a stopgap. You're looking for something better there. Who will he be replaced with? You know, it's tough to say. And ideally, it would be a draft pick. Ideally, it would be Chad Hansen who steps in. But I don't know that that's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, wide receiver just seems like there's always somebody available there. It's one of those positions that's not that tough to fill. There's always a wide receiver sitting out there on the market you can bring in. And Curse actually proves that to you because the Jets really didn't have much at the receiver position last year. And they were able to trade for Curse right before the start of the season, he was just a throw-in in the Sheldon Richardson deal. Seattle was kind of looking to dump him. You know, if you go back to that time period, Seattle just didn't want to have his contract on the team, and it kind of worked out because Seattle also did not want to give up a second-round pick and pay Sheldon Richardson's full salary. So what they did was they did end up taking Richardson's full salary, but in exchange, the Jets took salary in return. Seattle got Curse off the book, so that kind of helped facilitate that deal. That'll do it for our show today. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe to it. Do it on iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back next week.